You might have heard that we had a severe magnetic storm hit last week, I think it was, and it allowed some of our southern states, at least, to catch a glimpse of the beautiful Aurora Borealis. But the storm also had a few negative effects as well. We'll talk about that a little bit, and certainly talk about weather as we visit with one of our weather guys, Steve Ackerman. Steve, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies. John Martin couldn't be with us today. He'll be back next time in July. Steve, great to have you back.
It's great to be here.
We had quite a geomagnetic storm.
Yeah, which is the sun acting up and sending charged particles our way. It generated some beautiful aurora borealis, or northern lights. Although I didn't see any down here. I got up a couple of times and went outside and didn't see anything, and nobody posted photos.
I didn't see anything either. Yeah. I went out and looked.
And the prediction of where it was going to hit actually was we were just to the south of that. So
yeah.
Predicting these, where the northern lights is going to occur, is a challenge. But just like numerical weather prediction models, people are working on that in space weather, it's called, and are developing prediction models of where you'll see it.
Well, it was, and we did, parts of Wisconsin had some.
Yeah, I think northern parts saw it in Canada, and I actually saw somebody said in Iowa, the regions of Iowa. So it's not a circle, a nice eccentric circle. It kind of dips and moves around,
dips
and dives. And
what's a geomagnetic storm? I mean, how does it happen? What's going on?
So there's a lot of research going on with regard to the sun and how it's acting up. I think most people have heard of sunspots, and the sun goes through an 11-year cycle of sunspot maximum and sunspot minimums. And these geomagnetic storms, the previous one, came out of one of these sunspots. So they're very active, and it sent a blast of high-energy particles our way. And we're on the downside now of these sunspots. So we should be expecting to see the sun become less active than we have in the last 4 or 5 years.
And there are some problems. I mean, it creates some problems for us.
They can, yeah. They can really interfere with communications. They interfere with satellites, which means they can interfere with GPS. The electric grid, there's been some examples where the electric grids had shut down in Canada, and so people lose electricity.
No.
Yeah, so there's actually some talk that if we get a really bad geomagnetic storm, a lot of high-energy particles coming from the sun, that it could result in $3 trillion worth of damage in our electrical system, which is just phenomenal.
Well, if it's coming, do we all turn our lights off, or what do we?
Well, the good thing is that we're getting better at predicting it, and so you can take evasive actions, you know, and deal with particular power transmission stations and things like that. Satellites, a lot of satellites will button up, which means they'll close and try and protect their instruments. So there are things we can do, and that's why being able to predict space weather is important. But there's probably some things we won't. It's like a tornado, you know, You can sort of predict it. You know it's going to happen, but you know once it gets going, there's not much you can do.
Well, that's space weather, and we got our own weather to worry about right back here. I picked up the Wisconsin State Journal this morning and saw you had an article in on lightning.
Lightning, yeah, lightning safety. Lightning is a phenomenal thing to watch, and I'm sure we all have our lightning experiences or near experiences where it hits across the street or something like that. But it's also very, very dangerous. Your likelihood of getting hit is really small, but if you do,
you're not going to like it.
You're not going to like it, right? And there are some myths in time that have gone through in time about things you can do. So if somebody does get hit by lightning, for example, they are not electrified. So if you touch them, you're not going to get electrocuted. So if you're in a group and unfortunately somebody gets hit, you should go attend them and touch
and
them and see how they're right. Yeah,
help
them out, see what kind of help they need.
I was in Arizona on Mount Lemmon once, not just a couple of years ago now, and there was quite a lightning storm. I was in the car. I stayed.
You stayed. That's a good thing.
I was on the mountain, and there's lightning. And I, you know what? I'm going to sit in the car. But I had the window open. I had my camera, and I was just my phone, you know, as a camera.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And I was going to snap, and I was late snapping the lightning, of course.
Of course, right.
But another one struck just as I took the picture. So I got this lovely picture of this lightning going across the sky.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There are some, there's a lot of different, three different kinds of main lightning. One that goes from cloud to ground, one that stays within a cloud, and then one that'll go from one cloud to another cloud. And actually the path length, there's new instrumentation now out there that are measuring lightning, and the path lengths and how far they go was astonishing to me. I mean, they can go 50 miles. A single bolt can go 50-mile distance. Yeah, it's...
Well, this was a pretty good bolt. I was lucky, of course.
Lucky, right, yeah.
Really.
Lucky to be in your car.
Lucky to be in the car and lucky to, you know, I'm late on one, but it just happened to be exactly right for the next one.
I remember being in
one.
Colorado trying to take pictures of a thunderstorm, and, you know, you'd like, snap, yeah, and it's just, you know, just like, forget it. You know, just enjoy it.
Oh, man. Steve Ackerman, our guest today. We're talking weather and climate with him. You can join in. Maybe you've got a weather or climate question. If you do, call us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. We did get an email from CJ who said, I saw them in the Aurora Borealis here in Neillsville, central Wisconsin. Really, they were spectacular from midnight to 2 a.m.
So they did get to central Wisconsin. Yeah, that's it. They are, you know, I have this rule about Aurora Borealis is that if you go outside and you see the Northern Lights, you should go wake somebody up. So the fact that it was from midnight to 2 in the morning, hopefully CJ was watching them with somebody, unless he lives by himself.
I was in northern Wisconsin once, and I was on a fishing trip with a bunch of guys, and I woke up in the middle of the night realizing that I had not turned off the charger on my battery down at the boat. So I went down to, you know, do what I should have done like 8 hours earlier or whatever, and I caught the Northern Lights. It was, and just sitting on the lake, on the pier, actually in my boat, looking up at this, it's just
very peaceful. But you didn't wake anybody? You didn't wake up your other fellow fishing partners?
I really had to think about it.
It is peaceful.
It is peaceful, and I had to walk way back up that hill.
And then have to go way back down.
And maybe it would be gone by the time. And so I justified all that and sat there all by myself. In my boat with my nice boat seat looking back, looking across the lake at the Northern Lights. Oh, man. Dave in Schulzberg, it's your turn. Hi, Dave.
Good morning.
Morning.
Got a really unique thing. A week ago Saturday, 4 in the afternoon, Schulzberg, Wisconsin, a gentle little shower like we've had about every other day. But it started thundering. I said to my wife, can you hear the difference? Did you hear that? She goes, what? I said, there's no pauses. Thunder, wait for the lightning, thunder, whatever's coming. Over 15 minutes of a straight thunder.
Roll.
We thought, you know, people always say a tornado sounds like a freight train, and we're going to wake up tomorrow and find out outside of town there was a tornado. Amazing. I'll never hear it again in my life.
So it was just one sound that just kept going for 5 minutes, or was it, you know, like a thunder and then another thunder, then another thunder?
No,
that just kept...
No pause.
Well,
I mean, just a split second. It was a rolling thunder for 15 minutes. No lightning in between. No, let's count the seconds to see how close the storm is coming.
Yeah.
It was a gentle shower. I've asked people as close as 15 miles away in another community, did you hear it? No. But fortunately, I'm not crazy because everybody in Schulzberg you talked to thought it was the neatest thing.
Wow, but that's fascinating.
You never heard of such a thing.
No, but it doesn't surprise me because, you know, one, if you're hearing thunder, there's lightning around, right? Because lightning generates thunder. And that's just a sound wave. And so as that sound wave moves around in the atmosphere, it's a function of what the temperature structure of the atmosphere is. I could imagine situations where it's just propagating, different bolts are going on, but it's sounding like one uniform sound as it moves around. Or it could be the same sound wave that gets trapped in some temperature structure and then just keeps propagating around in the same area.
I'll be darned.
Yeah. Because there are zones where you can't hear the thunder, you know, so you'll hear the thunder and then there'll be a zone where you don't hear anything. And then, you know, another half mile away, you hear the thunder again.
Yeah, it was four in the afternoon, gentle rain. We did not visibly see any lightning. And then the conversation would go on further, and we'd pause and go, oh, my gosh. It was just
still going.
Like somebody was on an organ just holding one key. And it
wow.
Just, well, it was cool.
That is really great.
Very cool. Thanks, Dave, for calling. I appreciate it. Man, let's go to Jake in Milwaukee. Hi, Jake.
Hi there. How you got, gentlemen, doing this morning?
Great. Appreciate the call.
I actually had a question dealing more with the space weather.
Okay.
As far as I understand it, and I definitely don't claim to be an expert, the sunspots and flares will be growing as the sun continues to get older and hotter, correct?
I'm not sure. And what I'm saying is as it gets hot, yeah, that's probably true. As it gets hotter, and then as it gets older, eventually it starts to cool down. And so, for example, red stars are ones that are cooling down, I think. And I'm not sure if they have sunspots at all. That would be a question for an astronomer. But
yeah,
I was wondering if we had, if you knew at all when that might start affecting our Goldilocks zone.
What's the Goldilocks zone?
Perhaps I'm asking the wrong question.
I think we need an astronomer there.
We need an astronomer for that one. And we just had an astronomer on the show a week ago.
Oh, darn.
So,
yeah, the lifetime of a sun is really, really old, obviously. And our sun is pretty young, relatively speaking.
So it's going to be
it'll be a while before I think we start entering the aging phase.
A long time. We won't be here.
I won't be here.
I'm certainly not going to be here either. I'm pretty sure. Well, I hope not.
Right. Yeah.
We're in big trouble
right?
if you and I are still here.
Still around, right.
Oh, thanks so much.
Sorry about that, Jake.
Steve Ackerman, our guest, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW-Madison. He's with us right up till 12:30. Let's take a quick look at the news, then we'll be back with Steve. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here, taking a look at weather and climate with Steve Ackerman, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies, also professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. Always great to have him along to answer your weather and climate questions. And Eric in Madison's been waiting a bit, so let's go to Eric. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thanks, Steve and Larry, for taking my call.
Sure.
Your discussion earlier about lightning reminded me of when I was living in rural New Mexico, many years ago, 15 maybe. But there was a project going on that I was told about that might have been from one of the universities, New Mexico Tech or University of New Mexico, that actually had a lightning project where they had a giant cable spanned across a valley where they were trying to initiate lightning strikes to study that. I just didn't know if Steve knew about that. I didn't hear much about that other than that it was there when I was driving by it.
yeah.
Pointed out. So I never heard anything much about that. So I was wondering if Steve had any comment or knew about that project or if it's still going on. Mm-hmm.
I didn't hear of that project, but recently there was another project similar to that where they put a cable on a balloon and raised that up during a lightning storm and waited for that to get hit. And then what they did was, the main thing was not so much the studying the lightning bolt as it was mapping the sound of the thunder. Thunder is just a sound wave. So they had three or four instruments up to watch the propagation of the sound wave that generated the thunder, which was really fascinating. So it wouldn't surprise me in the past if they were doing that kind of thing, trying to get lightning to hit a cable or a key, like what's his name?
Ben Franklin.
Ben Franklin was trying to do. Whether or not that's true, I'm not exactly sure.
I've often wondered if he would have actually gotten just nailed.
I don't know. It might have. I mean, I don't think his kite string was made out of metal, right? So if it did get hit, it might have just, gone up in flames or something. But So no, yeah, I haven't heard about that. There was a really big lightning research group in Arizona. So if you're not sure about the state, but know that's the area, it could have been at Arizona.
Mm. Another one. Okay, thanks, Eric. Maybe somebody else has heard about that one. We'll, and if they have, we'll probably hear about it. Let's go to Jamie and Dousman next. Hi, Jamie.
Hi. thank you for accepting the call. I just want to let you know my mom got hit by lightning 3 times, once as a child in Dousman, and she was still in Dousman in high school in the basement.
Wow.
Got hit there. The third time, I can't remember exactly, but she's in heaven now. If I may digress to the individual that was calling about 15 minutes that he heard thunder, that could not have been lightning from a cloud to the ground. It must have been lightning from cloud to cloud to cloud, I think.
Yeah, that would make sense, I think, if it lasted that long.
Well, your mom survived 3 hits. Yeah. That's what, you know, there are people, there's stories about people that have been hit many, many times.
Yeah, there's a story of a National Parks ranger in particular who's been hit like 7 or 8 times or something like that. And you know, National Park ranger probably wouldn't surprise me so much because you're outdoors. And,
right.
And if you're outdoors, you are not safe. You know, we've gone through this series of how to be safe outdoors with regard to lightnings, and went from laying down, which you should not do.
You
should not lay down, because if it hits the ground, then you've just exposed yourself to a larger area and running a risk of getting hit as the lightning travels across the ground. And then it was crouch down and stay on the balls of your feet. And now it's basically run to protection. You know, so if you have a car like
there.
You did, run to the car.
Yeah.
I mean, there are things to avoid, like mountain peaks or, you know, high areas, or if you're really stuck outside and you can't be anywhere, you know, go to the lower spot if you can. But you're generally not safe. And indoors, generally, you are, although he was just saying about his mom getting hit while she was in the basement. The thing about indoors is you're generally safe, but you should stay away from metal. So I'm going to guess she was probably near a pipe or something, you know, like plumbing or something, and it came off the plumbing pipe.
Came off the plumbing.
Yeah.
Oh, man. We have Gail and Racine up next. Hi, Gail.
Hi. I'm a big weather geek myself.
Yay.
Yeah, it rules my life. The first thing I do every day is just listen for the weather report and plan accordingly. But yesterday, I was out at noon, and there was a faint rainbow totally encircling the sun, and then there was a much stronger sun dog off to one side. And it was just, I've seen that only twice in my life. I'm 58. And I just thought it was just so beautiful, but I just wish more people would pay attention to stuff like that, because so many people don't even see these things.
Yeah, that ring around the sun is called a halo, and it's generated by ice crystals in the sky, ice crystals of a particular shape in order to get that. And I totally agree. I remember a couple of years ago I was teaching our introductory class to weather and climate, and I've seen the halos and sun dogs a lot because I'm always looking for them because they're just fascinating. And I walked into class, and there was one outside, so I saw it. You know, then I went down, and then, you know, somebody asked a question, and then I asked the class. And at that time, there was probably about 250 in this class, students in the class. And half of them had never seen this feature, this halo.
Oh.
And two-thirds of them never even saw the one that was just outside. So I made them all go outside, and we went outside and looked at it.
At one point, too, I pointed this out to a person. You know, I was just out on break from work, and they just looked at it like, oh. And then that was just like, no big deal. You know, it's a big deal.
Yeah, it's a big deal. Atmospheric optics, is that's the general field to me, is
also
just phenomenal.
The thing about the magnetic storms creating complexities in the communication systems, we use Bluetooth. And so, yeah, we were affected by that for 3 hours last week.
Oh, really? So it went out, huh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So that was kind of interesting, too.
Did you get
I always wondered, but they never say that's why. But that's what I assume is going on, because I knew there was going to be possibilities to see the Northern Lights.
Did you see the Northern Lights up in Racine?
No. Looked, too, but no, I didn't.
It's so frustrating, isn't it? It's just like you get up at 1 o'clock in the morning, and it's like...
I know. And,
Because you also need clear skies. So yeah. We had some nice clear skies down here in Madison.
But I was out more like at 10 o'clock.
You got to get up a little early. Yeah, set that alarm.
No, but I was also up at 4, but then by then you get too much daylight going.
Yeah. Oh, right, yeah.
At 4, yes.
Yeah. Anyway, I really appreciate your shows very much. It's one of my favorite radio programs.
Thanks, Gail. Thanks.
Okay, you have a great day.
Yep, you too. Appreciate the call. Wow, that was a nice call. Oh, somebody is going to say, what the heck is a sun dog? So explain what's a sun dog.
Oh, so a sun dog is, again, the halo around the sun is ice crystals made of a particular shape. And the sun dogs are sort of like, we'll call them rainbow colors. They go from actually red out to yellow usually. They're off to the sides of the sun, right out to the horizon. They're longer shaped, so they kind of stick out if you see the whole halo. And they're called sun dogs or mock suns because they sort of look like the sun. It's a really bright spot in the sky. And then they faithfully follow the sun as it goes up and down, which is why they call it a dog.
You know, we were Paul Kinzer. I mentioned a couple of minutes back that we had an astronomer on, and Paul Kinzer was the guy. And he was listening. So he just called in with a couple of comments in regards to the sun heating up. He said the sun is heating up very slowly. In about a billion years, life will no longer be possible on Earth.
Okay, so we won't be around, is we?
No, we're pretty sure of that.
And we learned about Goldilocks, too, right?
And he says the Goldilocks zone is the area around the star where planets with enough atmospheric pressure can support liquid. So if it's too far away, it'll freeze. If it's too close, it'll melt. We're in the Goldilocks zone right now.
Where it's just right.
Just right. Just right. Dion in Neillsville. Hi, thank you for... And by the way, Paul, thank you for calling in. Appreciate it. Dion in Neillsville, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have a story to tell you, and I don't want you to think I'm nuts. Last week, a week ago today, on Monday, I think it was June 22nd, at 8:30 in the morning... we had a storm, thunder and lightning, although not a lot of thunder and lightning, and pouring rain. And it was very dark in the house, and our house is all open. We have not many walls. And I was sitting on the couch in front of the window doing a crossword puzzle, and I just happened to look up. And you're going to think I'm nuts.
No, I'm not.
Just below the ceiling, about a half a foot down, and about 13 feet into the house, from the outside wall, was a very, very bright white ball. It was very bright. It was like I would think a strobe might look like. It was not pulsating. It was just a really bright white ball.
Ball lightning.
And it was bigger than a softball, smaller than a basketball, I would say 6 to 8 inches in diameter. And it was spinning, and it was a little fuzzy around the edges. And then, just like that, it was gone. And then I heard a snap or a click. I've heard that before. If lightning strikes really closely, sometimes I'll hear that. And then there was thunder, but it wasn't really loud thunder. It wasn't that crack that you get if lightning does strike really closely.
If John and I have been Larry's guests now for like 15 years, and 15 years ago, if you would have said this, I would have thought you're nuts, although I wouldn't have said it. But there are so many people who have been calling in and seeing this feature called ball lightning, because it's like a ball of lightning that,
A lot of people have called the show about it over the years, Dion.
And they haven't been able to explain what causes it. Although about a year ago, some physicists were able to sort of replicate it in a lab on a plate, so not suspended in the atmosphere by itself. So, it's very rare feature to see, but I tell you, I wish I would see it.
I would like to see it too.
Yeah,
just to see it.
Can I ask you one more thing?
Hmm? Sure.
We just had an internet satellite dish attached to the side of our house. And this was not quite, but almost in a direct line with that. And one thing I noticed after this happened, none of our digital clocks needed to be reset, but the satellite modem, all the lights were out on it. Now, that could be because it was pouring rain, so I doubt there would have been an internet signal. I was not online, of course. But do you think that could have had anything to do with it?
It might have, yeah. I mean, ball lightning, if it's like regular lightning, is electrified. So, you know, if it could have been in the path, or even, you know, we've heard stories of ball lightning just moving through walls and things like that, too, which would then probably disrupt things that are electrical. Mm.
Well, I'm glad I wasn't nuts.
Yeah, no, you're right. No, not at all, Dion. Thanks a lot for calling and sharing that. I always like to hear when that happens. Yeah. We have Paul in Freeport with a question next. Hey, Paul.
Hi. Hey, I'm glad everybody got the memo to ask lightning questions. Yeah. Mine, through the years, I've many, many times been outside rolling up windows on a car or whatever, as a storm is coming along, and it's just real light rain. Then I hear a crack of thunder, and all of a sudden it just cuts loose. Yeah. And I always assumed it was like if you hit a tree branch, all the drops fall, you know, from the sound wave. But just the other day I thought, is it the heavier rain falling through the atmosphere already that causes the static, thus the lightning and the thunderclap? You know, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Does the thunderclap cause that heavy downpour, or does the heavy downpour cause the thunder?
Yeah, that's a good question. And the reason why it's good is that they're both related to what we call the updraft in the storm. You know, so the air that's rising up. The stronger that updraft is, the bigger raindrops the storm can hold before gravity pulls them out. So it's going to be... the size of the rain and the intensity of the rain is going to be related to the updraft. And the lightning is also related to turbulence. So liquid droplets colliding with ice crystals is sort of like the balloon on the wall. Those two different phases of the water is what causes the charge separation within the storm. And that eventually will lead to the lightning bolt. So they are correlated. The more vigorous the thunderstorm, the bigger the rain, and a lot of times the more the lightning. What I'm excited about is in about a year from now, we're going to launch a lightning mapper. NOAA, the National Weather Service, is going to launch a lightning mapper on a satellite. And so we'll be able to monitor all the lightning, not just the lightning that hits the ground, but all the three kinds of lightning.
Wow.
On a continuous basis. And there's theories and evidence that shows that the intensity of the lightning and how the intensity changes is related to the severity of the storm. So they've seen situations where all of a sudden, you know, there's a lot of lightning in a storm, and then all of a sudden the lightning will stop, and then a tornado will come down. So they're looking at these types of features. So I think we're going to understand a lot more in the future about lightning associated with severe weather and rainfall intensity.
Wow. And just to add, we got an email from Gary in Rhinelander, and this goes back to the comment about the New Mexico, the lightning research going on there. And Gary says the New Mexico Tech lightning research is being done on a 10,700-foot mountaintop near Socorro, New Mexico. It's called the Langmuir. Hmm. Langmuir Laboratory for Atmospheric Research. And it's been in existence for many years with lightning research as its main focus. And it's available. It's up online. So I bet if you put in New Mexico Tech lightning research, Socorro, New Mexico, you're going to get it.
Get it, yeah. Well, that's interesting. I knew Arizona was doing a lot of research. I didn't realize New Mexico. That's pretty cool.
So it's cool.
And that's the place you want to do it, on mountaintops. Get up
yeah.
high. Right?
Yep, you bet. Joanne in Jacksonport, excuse me. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you that Door County had fantastic northern lights.
Oh,
did you? Dan, that's a place to be.
I didn't get to see them because we have too many trees around, and I mostly just saw the really wide ribbons of clouds kind of undulating. Mm. But my daughter, who lives in Egg Harbor, said it's like they were coming up out of the bay, and they were green. And, I mean, they were just wonderful curtains. And then some of the people posted incredible ones that they saw up in the Sister Bay area.
Wow.
And I guess Washington Island, too. So they were just... I wish I would have gotten in the car.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Joanne, what day was that? What night was that?
Oh, gosh.
Was that a week ago or so?
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
That. Yeah.
About a week.
During the week. Yeah. And I think they saw them for two nights.
But, yeah, there was back-to-back. I mean, I know not the warnings, the alerts
but
were going
out. That was just, it was just spectacular.
Yeah, when you have an open area like that, like over a lake, when you see
they
fantastic.
They were seeing them coming out of the water, you know, like they were just rising up, and then those wonderful curtains and...
So yet another reason to go visit Door County, right?
Yeah.
You can only be sure. We thought we might because they were talking about the north, mm-hmm. and we never know if we're kind of like the stepchild for the weather reports, if whether we're considered north or not.
Right, that's
but,
right.
You know, there we are.
Yeah, there we are. Joanne, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I appreciate the call. Oh, I wish I'd been there.
Yeah, next time get in the car.
Next time I'm going to get in the car. Neil and Cameron, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hey, guys. The lady that called in with the ball in her living room or family room.
Ball lightning.
I don't think she's nuts at all. I'm a pilot, and we get St. Elmo's fire quite often in the cockpit. And I've seen it in other parts of the aircraft, too. When you go through dry precipitation like snow, at high speed, of course, it generates a tremendous amount of static electricity. Hmm. And we'll get this St. Elmo's. It's called St. Elmo's fire. And it'll move around on the windscreen inside the aircraft. And I've had guys tell me that they've seen balls rolling down the aisle of the airplane when they get really bad. And so with that, kind of was my impression that a lady maybe had a newer house. And I'm thinking as our houses get more technologically advanced, with different wiring systems and whatnot, that with a thunderstorm nearby, with a buildup of static electricity in the air, it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibilities.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. Yeah. And then what do you guys do when you have St. Elmo's fire, which is, I always envision it like a static electricity blue glow. Is there anything you guys do, or you touch the instruments? And I would worry about like shorting out or something.
Yeah, no, you just try not to touch the... It'll give you a shock, but I've never heard of anybody getting hurt by it.
Right, yeah.
It's just kind of interesting to watch. You can hear it snap. I mean, even with our headsets on, as you're flying along, if it builds up pretty good, you can hear where it will build up and then discharge, and you can actually hear that snap when it does that. And, of course, this is inside the airplane, so...
It's interesting.
Very interesting. Thanks, Neil.
Thanks for telling that.
Yeah. All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
I appreciate the call. Oh, we had Jenny sent us some sundog pictures.
That's a good sundog.
That is
on your website there. The bright spots right to the right.
On our Facebook page. Yeah. Actually, it's on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You should go to the post of the page on the left side when you get there, and you'll see it. And there's also a photo. I'm not sure what the top one is.
That's what we call fire on ice. So again, it's not a halo. But it is light interacting with ice crystals, and then that refraction causes the separation of the colors. And that's pretty amazing.
That is really. And here's another one.
And there's another one with the whole halo around the sun, and then you could just see the faint sun dogs off to the side. So if the cloud gets too thick, if you compare those two photos, in one photo it's almost blue sky, and so the sun dogs are really intense. And then in the other, the cloud is whiter. It's a little thicker. And so you don't get quite as an intense sundog.
Yeah, that's very, very cool. Well, note, we're out of time.
Great. Well, we'll come back. John will join me.
John will come back. You'll be back the last Monday of July. That's 27th, I think.
27th. That's
July,
a good day.
Yeah. It'll be a good day. Thanks a lot, Steve. Steve Ackerman, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW-Madison. Man, this whole 90 minutes just went flying by. I want to thank you very much for joining and listening in. Tomorrow we're going to learn about some home safety modifications that you can do in your home. And then we'll talk about Social Media Day. Tomorrow is Social Media Day, and we might talk about how it relates to social media and your kids, if you have them, among other things. You stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.